ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We will rally around Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner.
You're a big horse, and you must be ridden every Monday night.
Two-time NFL MVP.
They talk about this, the greatest show on turf. Maybe the best offense ever in football.
Super Bowl champion.
Warner to throw. Going deep downfield. Adjusting for it is Isaac Bruce. Touchdown. 73 yards.
Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Not just the NFL Hall of Fame. And I wear that as a badge of honor, because without pro football, in all its forms and fashions, I'm not here tonight.
Radio analyst for Westwood One Sports.
I told you, Kevin, strange things happen when there's a harvest supermoon.
NFL Network analyst.
By the way, I don't ask for credit usually, but to show Matthew Stafford throwing a baseball, and the fact that I don't mention that he went to high school with Clayton Kershaw, was remarkable restraint.
Yeah, it was.
Even though I just did mention it.
But I bet he could sling it. What'd you think?
No player's ever had five touchdown passes in an international series. That going for it, it's Adams. And we have history.
Matthew says, hey, I wanted to give you something else you haven't seen. Five touchdowns over here in London. What a performance by Matthew Stafford.
Kurt Warner with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
This segment with Kurt Warner is sponsored by Great Clips. It's gonna be great. And sponsored by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency? Call the plumbing professionals available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. Kurt Warner with Spiegel and Holmes. Lawrence Holmes is off today in his spot. Today is Anthony Herron. And Anthony, I had not realized you told me that you and Kurt worked together. On
we
several
did.
Things.
A bunch of arena football broadcasts we did together back in the day on the NFL Network. And I was still very young in my broadcast career. Kurt Warner was already Kurt Warner at that point, but he was a fantastic individual back then. And as you and Lawrence get to experience on a regular basis, he continues to be. What up, Kurt?
What's up, buddy? How you doing, Ant?
Good, man. Good.
So isn't it nice when somebody actually worked with you a long time ago and can say he's a decent person as opposed to just like...
And Kurt's not accustomed to that. Most people don't think that highly of him.
Well,
so it's, you know,
sometimes like, oh, that famous guy? Oh, yeah, he's a good person. But no, it's actually a different thing. Kurt, thanks for the time, man. Been dying to talk to you about this game where Caleb struggled a little bit, but the Bears won. What did you think as you watched some of Caleb in that game against the Saints?
I mean, I continue to see growth on my end. I mean, it's never going to be a perfect product. You know, very seldom play a perfect game. But again, I look at this offense as a whole, and I see the offense coming together. I mean, they're starting to run the football. They're starting to mix it up. I think Caleb is continuing to make a lot of plays that are there in front of him. I'm still fighting the battle that there's times where I just wish he would kind of play the play in front of him and, you know, not go off script as much and start running around and doing all of his spins and just play the game. But you have to understand that's going to be a process. And we've continued to talk about it. It's fighting the battle of what he's always done to what Ben wants him to do. And I think there's progress every week. And the offense just continues, in my opinion, to evolve and become a pro offense that can do a lot of different things. And then they're finding ways to win along that process. And that, to me, is what it's all about. You know, this game to kind of go up and then down and then up again and to make the plays that you have to make, you know, while you're growing into that process and learning how to do everything that Ben wants you to do and get more comfortable with the offense. I mean, I don't expect it to be a perfect product. And, you know, there's some issues that Caleb has to keep working on, some mental, some physical, that lead to some of those issues. But to me, I want to see progress every week, and I want to see him be able to win and look, you know, like an NFL offense. And I really feel like the last 2 weeks have been the best version of this Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams, Bears offense.
And it sounds like part of the point that you're evaluating there as well is just everything that's happening around Caleb, finally getting a more consistent, productive run game going with him. And you know, Caleb's role in that, I was kind of addressing this a little bit on the radio after the game Sunday, Kurt, that it shouldn't be discounted as Caleb is learning this system, that there's responsibilities he has for getting the Bears into the proper run play or canning plays to trade which direction the play is going for a young quarterback. How much do you think Ben Johnson sort of allows on his plate right there for how the Bears are running the football?
I mean, I think he's, you know, I think he's trying to give him as much as he can give him. And, you know, I think he's pushing the envelope there. And I was just tweeting somebody, you know, about it earlier, is that, you know, we don't really know what the ceiling is and what the upside is and how much Caleb can handle and how much he can play, you know, in structure and get through his processing and all. We don't know that yet. But to me, now's the time where you have to put all of that on his plate, and you've got to see what he can be and what he can handle. And, you know, because I'm still a firm believer that those are the things you have to do to be great at this level. Don't care how athletic you are. I don't care how, you know, crazy talented you are with your right arm and the throws that you can make. At the end of the day, the best quarterbacks in this league that compete at the highest level, you know, year in and year out, are the guys that can do those things. They can handle those things. They can play in structure on a consistent basis and make the right throw and make the right read. That's how you continue to win in this business. Even though we've got the most athletic quarterbacks we've ever had in the history of our game, that is still how you win at the highest level and at the biggest moments in this business. And so to me, you've got to keep throwing this stuff at him, and you got to figure out who he can be and know that it's not going to happen right now. And he's going to have to learn because he hasn't been there before and hasn't been forced to do that, but he's got to do that. I mean, I think we're kind of doing the same thing or seeing the same thing in Arizona with Kyler Murray. Is very talented and a gifted thrower and a gifted athlete. But we're in year 7 with Kyler and people still asking the same questions. Can he do this? You know, can he grow into this? And I think a lot of people are starting to think he can't. He's not going to be that guy because he hasn't shown it at this point. I don't know if he is or not, but those are the things you have to figure out and you have to determine if your guy is that guy, because that's the guy that can take you where you want to go. And we don't have those answers yet. So I think he's putting a lot on his plate. I mean, he's talked about it all through training camp, putting a lot on his plate. I'm throwing a lot of stuff at him. I'm seeing what he can handle. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, he's going to have to handle it all, mm-hmm. or at least a lot of it, if they're going to play at that high level.
Kurt, you mentioned some physical, some mental. Did you see anything that made you think, oh, that's mental? Like, was there something you had in mind as you referenced that?
When you say that in terms of
Caleb's play, as you were watching, you were thinking, oh, that's something he's got to understand that he's not understanding on a given play.
I mean, I think the mental part of it for me more than anything is allowing the offense to work for you. And so this isn't unique to Caleb. I actually just did a video on Drake May, who went 21 for 23
yep.
the other day. And so by all accounts, you know, it's record breaking. He does things that Tom Brady hasn't done. And if you watch the video, you're going to see there is 7-8 times in that game where there's guys wide open right in front of him. you know, that he's looking at or that are part of the read or that are coming into his vision, and he takes off and runs. You know, he doesn't throw it. He takes off and runs and blah, blah, blah. And it's fine. It's a positive play. And we're still 21 for 23. But my point is simply there's a lot of young guys in this league that are relying more on the athletic and the reactionary plays and less on the mental understanding and allowing their offenses to take that pressure off of them, you know, eliminate some hits, eliminate the physical part, the hard part of it, and allow the easy things to take over and work for you. And, you know, I think that's, again, what I see when I watch him, you know, basically every Sunday. There's a number of plays where I'm just like, just settle down, settle in there. Number one's not open. Number two's coming. It's coming. It's going to come right in your vision. It's right there. Just wait for it, you know, or something pops. And you see, you know, how quickly he moves to react and throw it. And you're like, relax. Like, expect that to come. Like, expect that to be open. Relax in your technique and play the game, where it just seems like some things are kind of surprising him mentally right now. Things that he's not really at the point where he can expect that or understand, oh, I'm looking at this read, but if that's not there, it's because this guy's taking it away and Ben's given me something that's going to replace that, and it's going to be there. Just relax and play through it and play with the timing of the play and allow it to work for you. So that's kind of the big thing that I see with a lot of these young quarterbacks. But the thing that shows up, you know, basically every week with Caleb, that some have gotten better and he's done a nice job with some of them, but you just want to see that become kind of the norm and the fabric of who he is within this offense. And then the runs and the reactionary stuff become secondary. So you don't have to rely on that, you know, every single time out. And again, I look at Drake May and he ran a bunch and made a lot of plays, but he also got beat up in that game, you know, and he takes a big hit on things that he doesn't have to, because there's things in front of him that are just going to be easier. And so those are the mental things that to me continue to kind of pop with a lot of young quarterbacks, including Caleb.
The Caleb interception on 3rd and 17, it looked like his eyes never went away from the target and the corner jumped it. Is that something that can improve and needs to improve?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to recall now the interception. I watched it before I took my long trip back from London, and
yep.
I'm all jet lagged right now.
No worries. It was 3rd and 17, a deep pattern on the left where a guy was schemed open. But anyway, he stared down.
It was a comeback to Roma Dunze on 3rd and 17, where he had his eyes out to the boundary side pretty much gotcha. The entire yep. drop.
Yep. Okay. You know, here's the thing is these are kind of things that people talk about all the time. Like, one thing I hear a lot of casuals say is he's staring down his receiver. And, you know, it's an interesting concept, because very seldom, I will say, in this game, are we really trying to work guys with our eyes. There's certain concepts. You got double seam concept. You got to work the free safety, use your eyes so you can work in one side or the other and throw the seam away from it. But a lot of concepts, you're actually reading something to the side that you're looking at, and you have to have your eyes over there to read that defender so you can get it out on time. Or you have a solo route, like a deep comeback, where you're not really reading anybody and you're not expecting anybody to be sitting back there at 18 yards reading your eyes the entire time. So you can get your eyes there a little bit earlier than you would otherwise, because it's about getting lined up and getting set up to make the throw on time, more than it is about, you know, holding somebody with your eyes. Only thing I will say, sometimes quarterbacks can get someplace too early with their eyes and it can mess up their timing. So I was a guy that liked to take my drop, understand the timing of a throw. So if I was throwing a one-on-one, it was get there early enough where I could be set and hitch into it and be lined up so I could be accurate with the throw, but not too early that I wanted to rush it. Because when your eyes and feet sometimes get there, you know, you're like, okay, I want to throw it. Oh, he's not ready. And now I'm, you know, kind of playing catch up. And so those kinds of things, it's all relative to a situation, instead of, you know, us always coming back and saying, well, gosh, he was staring down his receiver, or, you know, this guy got a jump because of that. That's not always the case. And oftentimes it's not, because quarterbacks should have their eyes to the side that they're throwing to, you know, in most situations, so they can read and make those plays on time.
For you, with some of the great receivers that you were able to be so productive with at multiple teams, how does that balance end up working where, you know, there are times where maybe you want to manipulate coverage with your eyes as a QB, while also there are times where you do need to know what is the leverage of the defensive back? How is my wide receiver perhaps adjusting on the fly to the coverage that's being seen and landmarks that are being hit? How did you get on kind of the same page with some of the wideouts that you were so productive with?
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a very valid point. There are a lot of things that happen in the course of a play that, you know, again, you know, I talk about casuals. I talk about a lot of fans that don't really understand it. And, you know, it's easy to come back and draw up a play on a board and say, this is how it's going to work. And, you know, this is where he's going to be when you get there. And the defense is basically going to avoid them and let them run right to where we're drawing them up on paper. And it's going to be easy. And then you get out there and all of those things happen that you're talking about, Ant. Like, okay, the safety is not in the exact same position that, you know, we said he was going to be in when we watched him on film. Or my receiver got banged at the 5-yard mark. So how does that affect what he's going to do? You know, there's press coverage over on, you know, again, we'll just use that comeback. Press coverage on a comeback to the left. Man, I want to see maybe his release early to see if he wins quickly or if he's getting jammed and what that's going to mean when I come back to him. And so there are all kinds of different elements that force guys to adjust, you know, midstream, mid play. And so a big thing, you know, for me was trusting my guys, you know, like, you know, and we talked a lot about details places that I was, and I harped on it a lot. Like, this is where I need you. You know, like, you have to push this to 12 yards. And this is the angle that I'm expecting you to come off on. The only way it changes is if this happens, you know, and those kinds of things are so vital in, you know, paying attention to the details, harping on the details, practicing the details, because the more you allow for leniency from guys, hey, you know, best release for you. You know, go inside, go outside, doesn't matter. To me, no, you got to go inside. Why? Because it affects a linebacker and it affects how I'm going to throw it and it affects the window to the guy outside of you. And so I think all of those things were the things that we worked on. And when we were running routes, it was like, this is what I need from you. This is what you have to do. And here's why you have to do it. And so to me, like, if something didn't happen right in practice, man, I was the first one over there saying, hey, can't have that. Got to do this, got to adjust this way. And so right or wrong, it was about me knowing exactly what those guys were going to do because we talked about it. And so I wasn't, you know, midstream in a game going, shoot, here we are. We never really talked about this scenario. Is he going to come out flat? Is he going to come out high? Right? Those are the things that you don't want, because now, A, you're either guessing as a quarterback, which leads to mistakes, or you're hesitating as a quarterback that leads to mistakes. So to me, it's about trying to see and talk through and think through every scenario that could happen. It's about detailing every aspect of things. This is what I need from you. This is why I see it this way. This is what's important on this route. So when it comes out and I'm looking the other way to hold a safety, or I'm trying to hold a linebacker inside, I know exactly where you're going to be, what your landmark is, and you got to make sure you get there at this depth every time, because that's going to give us the best chance to succeed.
Kurt, you mentioned Drake May. He agreed with you on this particular game. He said, quote, "I left some out there that I ended up running that I could have thrown," said Drake May. But overall, we're looking at a guy who's got a quarterback rating over 100 in 6 straight games. And in all of those, he's thrown for 200 or more yards. Like, there's, woof. Do the Patriots have something very special in this 23-year-old kid drafted after Caleb Williams?
I mean, I think he's got a chance. I mean, the thing that he's doing so incredibly well is throwing the ball down the field. Like, he is so accurate on the big throws right now, and he's getting numerous big throws every single game. And so where he may be missing. So I think about them last year. Last year, you know, he had some good moments. I thought he played well last year, but, you know, it wasn't anything like this year, because last year they hardly ever got big plays. And so now when you're not getting some of those chunk big plays, now it becomes vital that you're not leaving stuff out there. You're not taking off and running when you've got something working for you, because every one of those completions is so vital for you to finish and score. Well, if you miss one of those and leave one out there, and then you come back and hit a 40-yarder, you know, four more times in the game, those things can be covered up a little bit more. And so he's doing a lot of things really well, and they're doing some things really well. And I love Josh McDaniels, and I believe what he's going to bring to Drake May. You add in the physical gifts, you know, the athletic ability, and yeah, I mean, we're seeing something really good in a second-year player that excites you, because – he's putting all of those things together. You understand the, you know, the physical, you know, has a chance to be special. So I'm excited about what I'm seeing from Drake May right now. I would probably say of all the second year guys, he is playing by far better than any of those guys. You know, Jaden was unbelievable last year. He's not playing nearly as well. Bo had some good moments last year. Don't think he's playing nearly as well. I think Caleb's playing better, but not quite up to Drake's standard, you know, that he's playing at right now. And so I think he's the best second-year quarterback that we're seeing right now, and there's still a lot of room for improvement for him moving forward.
Kurt Warner, great stuff, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, guys. Talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. That's Kurt Warner, who joined us right there. I don't know, man. Bo Nix in the fourth quarter on Sunday was 16 of 25 for 174 yards and two touchdowns. He also ran for 46 yards and another score. All of that was in the fourth quarter. That was a ridiculous game.
Yeah,
that the Broncos won.
A great comeback that he led.
Yeah.
I don't think Kurt said he stinks.
No, yeah. It's me, man. Like, I am trying to be patient.
You constantly see all of Caleb's warts.
No. That's not what I'm saying. Well, I'm saying that I'm trying to be patient with the development.
Uh-huh.
And because he deserves the patience, and we don't have to write the book on it right now. But Drake May looks good, and Jaden Daniels looks good, and I think Bo Nix looks good. And I'm not sure about J.J. McCarthy, and Michael Penix has taken a step back. So there's a lot there. How many of them are going to end up being better quarterbacks? Right now, who's better?
But I think the reference to Caleb's warts, like, there's probably some Denver fans like, wow, look at that fourth quarter comeback that Caleb led in comparison with Bo Nix, because they are constantly looking at the frustrating moments that Bo suffers as well, whether that's interceptions being thrown, running when he shouldn't run, taking sacks he shouldn't take.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, the magical moments are there for young and talented guys too, just as Caleb has had.
How about Bo Nix's really good friend and college wide receiver on Tampa Bay last night, Tez Johnson?
Oh, yeah.
Woo! That touchdown catch all that movement from
we'll take
Tez?
Some of that around here.
Yeah, we got to talk about the Bears wide receivers a little bit.
The Tez factor that I called the other day, or the Tez effect.
I don't think it was him that they were talking about.
That's not the Tez.
It could be. All right, we come back, though. Some very noisy moments from a huge ball game last night and a broadcast change that must be made. It's Spiegs and Ann Heron on Spiegel and Holmes on The Score.
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want more than headlines this Bears season, listen to the Take the North podcast. I'm Mark Rohde, joined by Dan Wiederer. We bring you honest, unfiltered Bears talk three times a week, and we're not afraid to be critical when it's deserved or certainly give credit when it is earned. With insider access and perspective that brings you inside the Bears locker room, Take the North is your home for Bears conversation that keeps it real. Listen to and follow Take the North wherever you get your pods.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Who would dare interrupt me during my midday bath?
Yeah.
Oh, the Spiegel and Holmes Show.
Afternoons on the Score.
First real scoring chance for the Blue Jays since the first inning. 1-0 pitch. Swing and a fly ball. Left field indeed. A Rosarena turns. Gone! A Springer! Dinger! 4-3 Blue Jays in the bottom of the seventh!
Yeah, that was quite a moment. Which call is that? Is that local Toronto radio?
Yeah, it's
Ben?
Yes, yeah, the Shulman.
It's Ben Shulman on the call, the son of Dan Shulman. Both those guys have been guests on the PBP, Voices of Baseball podcast, oh, nice. By the way. How about this? Ben Shulman's going to get to call the Blue Jays World Series on the radio. Dan Shulman gets to call it on TV because Canada has its own television package.
Wow.
So local Toronto television
Sportsnet,
crew.
Sportsnet, right?
Yeah. They still get to do their job.
TSN.
So all of us out there who long for our local television crew when the team gets there, in this happenstance, they actually get to have their Dan Shulman. I don't know whether it's like technically a national broadcast, but Toronto is the team for the nation of Canada, so he can be as homerific as he wants to.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Think about it through that lens.
Man, yeah. So George Springer, an unbelievable postseason career, and just a crazy, crazy home run last night.
How long has it been since the bat flip? Was it Batista?
Batista.
Yeah.
10 years, right? I think,
has it been a decade now?
I think it's 10 years.
Because when I saw that, that's immediately where my brain went. It's, oh, he's got to flip the bat a half mile in the air. Like, that'll be a nice callback to the Batista hit.
It's 10 years ago and 1 week. So, yeah, exactly 10 years ago. Yeah, so, I mean, Toronto has a few. They've got Joe Carter with the walk-off homer to win a World Series.
Uh-huh.
And they've got Batista's bat flip, and now they've got the Springer home run. We're going to talk to John Morosi later on in the show. He was there. I came across this. This is the actual sound of it without any broadcast on it. This is a sense of how loud it was when the place exploded after Springer homered. So the sound got up to 110 decibels, and that is equivalent to if you were on a city street and you saw a guy working with a jackhammer and you walked up to him and stood 3 feet away.
Huh.
That's how loud
it was. So uncomfortably loud.
Uncomfortably, problematically, hearing loss quality loud.
So like 6-year-old in a downtown condo, ear-piercing loud. Not from any personal reference.
It doesn't. No, I can't imagine that it would be. Incredible game last night, and a lot of twists and turns. There was a couple, and Anthony, there were a couple little strategic moments that I really wanted discussed at a high level in the broadcast booth, and they did not happen. Just did not happen at all.
Maybe the moment didn't call for it. It wasn't that big of a game.
Both moments did. It is a big game, as a matter of fact. One was when J.P. Crawford sacrificed. He sacrificed in the second inning.
He sacrificed.
Of a 1-1 game. He did a sacrifice bunt to set up the 8 and 9 hitters for Seattle. And the 8 and 9 hitters have been an absolute freaking black hole in that lineup all series long, and they both made easy outs. Leo Rivas struck out swinging, and Robles grounded out. That's with men on first and second and nobody out, and a chance to get some more runs right away. They didn't even bring that up. You got to bring that up and just at least discuss it.
Yeah.
And Joe Davis and John Smoltz did not even bring it up. And then the other one is the key moment in the game right before that Springer home run. The conversation that was going on social media, going on in text threads for me, along with some baseball people and some baseball fans, is would you bring in your closer? Would you bring in Andrés Muñoz, who had only thrown 2 innings the whole series, in the 7th inning of Game 7, because this might be the moment.
Yeah.
This, like, you might not get a chance in the 8th or 9th to use him if this moment doesn't happen right here. And Dan Wilson had questionable bullpen decisions a couple times, including the night before when he used Bizardo for 2 innings when they were down 5-2. He used Brash, I think, in the 5th inning when they were down 5-2. So those are his 2 high leverage guys. But this is Game 7. As Lawrence likes to say, this is Johnny Allstaff. Yeah. So you gotta have this conversation. And everybody in baseball, other than the 2 guys in the booth, was having the conversation. Wait a minute. One guy in the booth was trying to have the conversation. Joe Davis brought it up. John Smoltz had nothing for him.
Pete Woodworth, the pitching coach, coming out. Bizardo continues to warm. Spire has been getting up and down as well. Let me ask you this, though. Why not consider having Munoz ready right now with the top of the order coming?
Well, the biggest reason is there's going to be a bunt here.
Not for this hitter. I'm saying get him up, get him ready.
Yeah, and the one thing to consider is what Munoz, I wish I knew how much he was throwing beforehand.
Hadn't warmed at all in this game. It's just bizarre to inspire right now. After Jimenez, who, like you said, is going to try to move the timer into scoring position, it's the top of the order. Springer, Lucas, Guerrero. There's the game. Six outs from your closer doesn't have to be the last 6 outs. Not these days.
Man, good job, Joe Davis.
It's a nice setup from Joe Davis.
And absolutely nothing from John Smoltz.
Just very politely nestled it onto the tee and set it up for him.
Smoltz first brings up the idea of a bunt. There's 2 on and first base is open. There is not going to be a bunt from that hitter. Would there be from another hitter? Who cares? And it's the top of the order as Joe Davis has to go back and dictate. And Smoltz says, I wish I knew how much he was warming up. And Joe Davis has to answer for him. He wasn't warming up yet in this game. That's the point.
It's the premise of what Joe Davis is bringing up in the moment.
Everybody in baseball is thinking about it, but Smoltz can't even wrap his head around it. And if you've watched Smoltz, you see an old school thinker who is slowly trying to assimilate himself begrudgingly into what the modern game has begun. This was a moment where his lack of even willingness to accept how the world has changed was laid bare. That was rough, man. Andrés Muñoz probably should have been the guy. I mean, and if he's not the guy, it at the very least has to be an informed conversation. It's got to be something you think about before the game that you get ready for. It's got to be something you start thinking about in the 6th inning. You start thinking about which moment in 7, 8, and 9 is going to matter the most. And Smoltz was thoroughly unprepared to discuss it. That was an embarrassment on the biggest stage. And it's kind of the final piece for me. Smoltz should not be the A-team broadcaster. He should not be the A-team analyst. I would much rather have, at this moment, the B-team analyst tandem of A.J. Pierzynski and Adam Wainwright, who are a battery and can talk through the entire situation, and A.J. busts his ass to modernize and understand what the thought process is, and I guarantee you that AJ and Wainwright would have been ready for that conversation in a way that John Smoltz was not.
And Smoltz, when there's something that he's actually grasping in the moment as more modern baseball than the sport he played, he doesn't mind verbally pushing back against it. That he just didn't even seem to really gather that he, as frequently as Joe Davis kind of politely teed it up and then went all the way to saying modern baseball, just to sort of let him know we're talking about the here and now. He went about it several different ways, yes, to try and get Smoltz into that moment. John Smoltz, and for whatever reason, I mean, he was a starter, he was a reliever, he was excellent throughout his career, and he calls games, of course, on a regular basis for years now in the biggest moments in the sport.
Right.
He didn't seem there mentally. Like, I don't even think he was just grasping where Joe Davis was taking it.
He didn't have a grasp of that even being a plausible conversation.
Yeah.
And sometimes that, like, did a producer talk to him about that pregame? Did they talk about, all right, let's be ready for all of this. When's he going to use Munoz? Or, like, when do you use your closer?
Right.
Because you don't wait until you hopefully have a
Who's
lead
been very
in the
light
ninth.
Duty up to this point in the series. He,
and Joe Davis handed it to him. He can get six outs. It doesn't have to be the eighth,
right,
and ninth. He could have given you the seventh and the eighth, and then you could have asked him, can you give me the ninth, too? You haven't thrown much. We're going to have 5 days off before the World Series. Munoz might have been able to give you the ninth, too. If he goes right after guys and gets quick outs, you don't know.
Yeah.
Or you could use Bizardo or Brash or somebody for the final three outs. Hell, you could use Luis Castillo for the final three outs. There's your moment. Have the conversation. And the number one analyst was thoroughly unprepared to do it. That's
now,
brutal.
For Smoltz in that moment, so that's a huge just sort of, you know, drop can of corn for John Smoltz in that moment in Game 7 on that stage, leading up until now. Now that he's been doing this for a minute, do you feel like you've been witnessing much growth from him?
Yes,
or,
yes. Okay. There's been some, and there's been some inclusion of some analytics, and that's what I'm saying. Like, there's been some growth and some bend, and the pushback is okay. Because in that 15-inning game with Wainwright and AJ and Amin, there was great pushback in the conversations. AJ would be going, why aren't we bunting?
Right.
Wait, come on, bunt!
Right.
And Amin would be like, they don't do that. You know that. This is how it works, right? And Wainwright, like, and they would talk about the issues. It felt like dudes hanging out, having a baseball conversation. Mm. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Smoltz doesn't really have those. And he doesn't really have that exchange very often. Because
he just seems so put off by it.
Yeah,
right?
It's a bummer. So I would advocate for that change almost immediately. But it won't happen immediately, maybe in the offseason. It's Spiegel and Holmes. Anthony Herron is in for Lawrence Holmes. When we come back, what constitutes a failure of a season? Let's discuss that when we come back on The Score.
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know
the Browns outside of
Browns. You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want more than headlines this Bears season, listen to the Take the North podcast. I'm Mark Rohde, joined by Dan Wiederer. We bring you honest, unfiltered Bears talk 3 times a week, and we're not afraid to be critical when it's deserved or certainly give credit when it is earned. With insider access and perspective that brings you inside the Bears locker room, Take the North is your home for Bears conversation that keeps it real. Listen to and follow Take the North wherever you get your pods.
And the 3-2 on the way, swing and a miss, strike three. The ball game is over, and the Blue Jays win it tonight. A come from behind, 4-3 win over the Mariners to win game 7 of the American League Championship Series. And the Blue Jays celebrate on the diamond before 50,000 fans here at Rogers Center. What a season for the Mariners here in 2025. They had a lot of magic throughout the year, a lot of heroes throughout the year, a lot of great wins. But the season comes to a screeching halt.
God love you, Chris Tannehill, for going to the local radio calls. That's Rick Rizz. There's an S and a Z and then another Z in there. Maybe some more S's. We're not sure. On the Seattle call. Hell of a season. I was rooting for them to get there for the first time. It's Spiegel and Holmes. It's Spiegs and Ann Heron. Top of the hour, we talk Bulls and NBA and Michael Jordan and Roundball Rock. And lots of Bears after that and through the rest of the show. But after the game last night, two moments of reaction that we need to give you and think about a little bit from that Seattle Post. So he said, great season, right? To paraphrase Rick, really good season. Cal Raleigh, switch hitting catcher who hit 60 homers during the year and what, 5 more in the postseason? And ended the season in the on-deck circle. Just brutal. Was talking about what their season was. Was asked to summarize their season, and he gave the world this.
I'm super proud of these guys. It was a great team effort. Love every guy in this room, but ultimately it's not what we wanted. And it's... I hate to use the word failure, but it's a failure. And that's what we expected, was to get to a World Series, win a World Series, and that's, what the bar is and the standard is, and, that's what we want to hold ourselves accountable to. But, it hurts, but I don't want that to take away from, like I said, I'm proud of the guys in this room. I thought we fought all the way to the end. Like I said, it was a great group of guys, and I love every single one of them.
Failure. I can't call their season a failure.
Strong word.
Can you call their season a failure? I know, if you're not first, you're last! and the whole thing, and it happened on this station for a long time, like, what are you doing to get closer to a championship? Only a champion, and championship or bust. But man, only one baseball team ends up thoroughly happy. He lost in game 7 of the ALCS. This is not a failure.
There are some organizations that are there, though, right? Like, I don't put Seattle in that context. But
no. The Yankees not winning a championship?
Yeah, I'd say both New York teams. Like, even though the Mets aren't consistently in that conversation with their production, but the money that we know they've constantly spent, and they find themselves occasionally in there in the postseason mix also, that I think that's fair for either of the New York teams to say that, but especially the Yankees. For the Cubs don't necessarily allow us to view them that way because they're not always kind of going for it. But I get where Cubs fans, feel like that too.
Well, we had this conversation about the Cubs after they lost in the NLDS. If they'd beaten the Brewers and lost to the Dodgers, would we be calling the season a failure? No chance. No chance. I don't think this Cubs season was a failure. Mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately disappointing? Sure. But not a failure. I mean, that's just an emotional dude.
The Brewers, who are just constantly there, even though they don't spin like one of the big dogs, but the regular season has them there. Postseason success has them in that mix. Like, who are the franchises in baseball that are truly World Series or bust? I don't put Seattle in that mix. I don't view the Mariners like that, like World Series or bust, or it's just a failure if you don't get there. But I do think it's a fair way to view some of these squads. I mentioned the New York teams. I don't put the Brewers there, even though they're constantly in that mix, but just because they don't go out and spend in that way.
But if getting there is the goal, like the Brewers merely getting there might be a thing. The Mariners have never been there.
Right.
So just getting there, like, a texter asked, if they got to the World Series and lost it, would that still be considered a failure in the big dumper's eyes? You know,
yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe it's just getting there and being able to say at least that. So maybe that's the difference.
Well, with the magic that they had going in the regular season and how well things went for them, they certainly had every expectation of getting to the World Series, having the opportunity to win a championship.
Yeah.
So internally, I get where that feeling is there, but I'm certainly not amongst the crew of outsiders who saw the Mariners as a squad that I said, that's my pick for the World Series.
I get you. It is decades that they wanted to get there. That was great baseball, but maybe ultimately disappointing.
Yeah. Big dumpster?
That's close. That's close. There's another way to process the emotions, and that is to be Julio Rodriguez in the background of this Brian Wu soundbite after the game.
Gone is further than any other team in franchise history.
Legacy is no one's really satisfied or happy with this, I think.
We have confirmation that's Julio Rodriguez letting his emotions fly with some primal scream therapy.
No, I actually think that's Wesley from A Princess Bride after his heart is broken. And then you could just hear him in the distance when they crank the lever on the machine. And it's just there. You hear that primal scream in the distance. Inigo Montoya somewhere telling someone that is the sound of heartbreak. It gets no worse than that.
I know a guy whose name rhymes with Chris Tannehill who thought Julio Rodriguez should have been able to hold off on that slider.
Hey, that's why you're a star. You got to spit on that pitch, spit on that thing, and let the big dumpster come up.
But, dude, it looks like a fastball, and he struck out the other two guys with fastball.
I knew it was a breaking ball on the couch.
It was going to break the whole way.
Oh, that's the feeling. Mm. That's the feeling of not taking a walk. And letting the big dumpster come up there with a chance to.
Sounds painful. Sounds very painful.
It really does.
Sounds like you got hit in the nose by an 8-year-old with a basketball.
No, that's
that
you.
Like.
That's you. Yeah. That's what Anthony did after Bishop intentionally fired a basketball at your face.
Don't you put that evil on my son.
Oh, man.
Putting that evil on me.
Can we play the audio of the thing when we talk about this later on? Because it sure did sound like it. But I feel you, Julio.
They put so much into it, man.
Not a failure, boys.
All that work
not
just coming to an end.
A failure.
How do I assess the season?
That encapsulates it.
Oh, there
right
it is.
There.
This is the combo platter. When local coverage fuses with national and you can't remember what was Chicago and what was not? That's Anthony Aaron's predicament on the eve of the NBA's return. We'll discuss next on The Score.
ARC Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARC machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want more than headlines this Bears season, listen to the Take the North podcast. I'm Mark Rohde, joined by Dan Wiederer. We bring you honest, unfiltered Bears talk 3 times a week, and we're not afraid to be critical when it's deserved or certainly give credit when it is earned. With insider access and perspective that brings you inside the Bears locker room, Take the North is your home for Bears conversation that keeps it real. Listen to and follow Take the North wherever you get your pods.